Good morning. Welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I am your host, Daniela Doncel, and welcome to our first show of the 2019 spring semester. Here are the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. UConn President Susan Herbst is saying goodbye to the Husky community as the president and saying hello as a faculty member at the Stamford campus. On January 14th, Herbst welcomed students back to campus in her last welcome back email as president. Herbst says she'll return to research and teaching in American political culture at UConn Stamford. She says, "I look forward to resuming my scholarly writing, but also to helping prepare our students to be the outstanding citizens so necessary for a free nation to succeed." She says we should expect the new UConn president in July. Winter weather is bursting pipes and evacuating buildings at UConn this week. Building Services Director Ari Ristow says there have been 6 burst pipes here at the store's campus since Monday. Daily Campus correspondent Luke Hydash reports Ristow saying it's all because of water freezing in the pipes when there's not enough heating, which causes damages. Hydash says on Tuesday afternoon, a sprinkler pipe burst in Row. The building was evacuated and classes were disrupted. Ristow says campus work staff members are trained to keep a lookout for potential trouble to avoid issues from the burst pipes. Ristow says once it starts to get warmer outside, we might see some minor flooding. Funding is going to get a bit easier for eligible student clubs thanks to new legislation from UConn's undergraduate student government. Daily Campus correspondent Miranda Gracias reports that this legislation fixes the funding policies. USG Chief Justice Nandam Tumu says the old policies were confusing and vague. Tumu says the new ones are a lot more detailed and will help organizations reach the $10,000 funding cap and pay less out of pocket. Amazon at stores packed it up and left stores center on January 17th. It also left students unhappy. UConn biology major Shivani Doshi says she's super sad and annoyed because with Amazon at stores, it takes way less time to order mail than through UConn. Another biology student, Victoria Costor, says she's surprised to see it go since it was so convenient. Daily Campus correspondent Rachel Phillipson says the store first opened back in fall of 2016 after UConn had multiple mailroom backups from Amazon Prime packages. Fine arts major Michelle Gonzalez says she guesses she'll have to figure out how her UConn mailroom works. Rivers and streams are getting saltier and more acidic with road de-icers, and UConn hopes to fix that in nearby Eagleville Brook. Daily Campus News correspondent Gabriella DeBenedictis reports this trend's been going on for over the last 5 decades, and this salty alkaline water can release harmful chemicals. Associate UConn Extension educator Mike Dietz says the de-icer doesn't just leave when winter ends. It ends up in UConn soil and groundwater. Associate Vice President of UConn Facilities Michael Jednak says they're keeping an eye on how much road salt is spread across campus. Jednak says, "We're interested in doing all we can to keep roads and walkways usable and safe, while also being mindful of minimizing environmental impacts." At UConn, plastic bags are out and environmentally friendly brown paper bags are in. Daily Campus correspondent Taylor Harton says this past Monday, UConn Dining Services started using brown bags at every Grab and Go and in the Student Union. It's been a collaboration between Dining Services and UConn PIRG. PIRG member Kelly Rafferty says they've been working on this switch to paper bags for over a year. Rafferty says 90% of students like the idea of changing to paper bags in a survey at all 8 dining halls. This is the final step, though. Rafferty says this is a step in encouraging students to bring their own bags, since that's the most eco-friendly way to use goods and services. Originally, these bags were going to have a 10-cent fee, but there was no way to charge money on a student's FlexPass. Dining Services Director C. Dennis Pierce says the 10-cent fee will just be subsidized. UConn skydivers bring home the gold at the 2019 U.S. Parachute Association's National Collegiate Parachuting Championship as the only non-military academy team to do so this year. Gabriella DeBenedictis reports the UConn skydiving team won the gold in the Advanced Four-Way Formation Skydiving event with the name CT True Blue. Things got a bit bumpy when days before the competition, two people couldn't jump due to doctor's orders. Team member Rihanna Sullivan says they managed to get a new team, and despite little training, they still won the gold. Over winter break, our news correspondent Ali Urban worked on a review of the newest album from Swedish metal band Amaranth called Helix with Nick Sabilka. Take a listen to a portion of it. The full version can be heard on WHUS.org.
Ali here. Nick was actually the one who introduced me to Swedish metal band Amaranth back in 2016. I only started listening to metal in 2015, so I relied a lot on my friends to recommend new bands and songs for me to listen to. I immediately took a liking to Amaranth and absolutely fell in love with the concept of having three diverse and powerful vocalists bringing their extraordinary talents to the table. It's a very distinct and unique aspect within the band, which is comprised of six members. Lineup is as follows: Elise Red, female clean vocals; Henrik Englund Wilhelmsen, male unclean vocals from 2013 to present; Nils Molin, male clean vocals from 2017 to present; Olaf Murk, guitars, keyboards, and synthesizers; Morten Lue Sørensen, drums; and Johan Andresen, bass. There have been two lineup changes in the past with both male vocalists. Joachim Jake E. Lundberg provided clean vocals up until 2017, and Andreas Solveström was the unclean vocalist until 2013. On a side note, I'd like to clarify that unclean vocals are also known as death growls, which are often used in metal.
Hey everyone, this is Nick. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Ali, how you were introduced to them, because frankly, I'm not quite sure I know the answer to that myself. My metal roots go all the way back to 2004 when I discovered Rammstein, and well, it's kind of just taken off from there. As I have expanded my horizons, though, I've acquired a bit of a hunger for metal bands with a strong female lead, and well, you can't get much better than Elise. I believe I can thank the likes of Nightwish for ensuring my stumbling across their music, but we're not really here to talk about them. This is about Helix.
Helix is Amaranth's fifth studio album, and was released on October 17th, 2018, roughly 2 years after the release of their fourth album, Maximalism. Come to think of it, I'm pretty sure my fellow collaborator and I also had a listening party for that album. Personally, I felt it wasn't as strong as their first self-titled debut or The Nexus, but it was still a pretty decent release.
I absolutely agree that Maximilian was far from my favorite, but I think it's important to note that albums really deserve a chance to stand on their own accord. You hear it all the time with bands. Take All That Remains, for example. It is commonly agreed upon that The Fall of Ideals is considered one of their better works, but by no means does that suggest that The Order of Things isn't a solid release worthy of respect as well. Quite frankly, I listen to the latter more than the former.
I absolutely agree with you on this point. It's true that we as individuals have certain preferences along with the rest of society. Despite this, artists work hard to create and release something that they're proud of. Although some works may be praised higher than the rest, that doesn't mean that other albums should be overlooked.
And now for today's weather. Today it's going to be mostly sunny with a high near 33, which is nice compared to how rainy it was yesterday. And tonight we're going to see it'll still be mostly clear with a low around 14. Tomorrow it's also going to be mostly sunny with a high near 27. And Saturday night it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 19. So stay warm out there, everyone. So now, that's all the news we have this week. We'll be going into a quick break before heading into our talk segment of the show, where I'll be talking to someone about the music of a very special video game for me.
University of Connecticut police arrested the White House correspondent from a conservative...
Fiestas de la Calle San Sebastian on Thursday.
My passion. Children are the future.
This budget sees UConn state funding cut by more than $300 million over the next
high winds and heavy rain damaged a ventilation stack.
Undergraduate Student Government Student Services Committee released a petition after the...
Stories for students written by student journalists. Listen to Husky Nation News every Friday. Read articles and view photography on WHUS.org. Become involved by contacting News Director at WHUS.org. Stay informed with the WHUS News Team on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.
And we're back. We'll now be moving into the talk segment of our news show. Please note, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. So I had the honor and pleasure of speaking to the composer of Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3, including the Tomb Raider theme and the recently released newest album of the music from the games called the Tomb Raider Suite. Tomb Raider is a video game that is very near and dear to my heart. So this interview not only is a significant step in my career and life, but it also is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever conducted. So just so you know, this is just an excerpt of the interview. If you'd like to hear the full version, you can check it out on WHUS.org next week. So without further ado, here is a portion of my interview with Tomb Raider Suite composer Nathan McCree. I just want to congratulate you for all the success that you found with the Tomb Raider Suite. I'm sure it's so exciting to see it all just unravel after like 20 years of planning.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a long journey, but I haven't ever wanted to give up on it. You know, I've had many conversations with Eidos and then Square Enix over those 20 years, and all of those conversations ended up with a no, until the last one in 2014 when the 20th anniversary was coming up in 2016. And so at that time, I guess the timing was right and Square Enix were at that point interested in doing something. So yeah, you know, I never gave up on it. I always thought it was a worthwhile project doing, and it was something that I just always wanted to do, and the fans, you know, kept emailing me all that time, and I just thought that they deserved it as well. So yeah, so thank you. Yeah, it's like I say, it's been a long journey, but got there in the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So speaking about, of course, the challenges that have come along with the work, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had about 3 weeks to create like the entire soundtrack of the first Tomb Raider. And with that time constraint, that played a part in like the simplicity of the melodies that came into the game and everything. But now you have a full orchestra and a full, you know, album, and so you've got a lot more time and space to add complexity and detail to the music. So I'm wondering if you could talk about the challenges and differences that come with, you know, working with a synthesizer and working with shorter pieces than with working with a full orchestra and longer pieces. And how those differ.
Okay, so, well, firstly, when I was writing the music, that is the Tomb Raider Suite, when I was writing the extensions to the original music, I wasn't working with an orchestra. It was just the same environment as it was 20 years ago. So it was just me and my keyboards. The main, I wouldn't say struggle, but consideration I had, I guess, was making sure that I was writing the new material in the same style as I did 20 years ago. You know, the way I write music now is different to how I did back then. And I found myself sometimes complicating things too much. And, you know, then stripping stuff out and kind of saying to myself, no, you wouldn't have done that 20 years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the main focus, if you like, of keeping myself in check, just to make sure I didn't, you know, stray off the path too much. I guess I was, you know, in the back of my mind, I was always a little bit concerned that it wouldn't, that, you know, that people wouldn't accept it as, you know, a sort of natural extension of that piece of music. You know, I kept thinking, oh, people are just going to go, no, that's that new bit. It's not like the original Tomb Raider, you know, because, you know, everyone's got their opinion. But to my surprise, I guess, the comments that I've had from people is that, you know, they've said things like, so did you write that stuff 20 years ago, but you didn't have chance to put it in the game? You know, was this stuff that was just sat on the shelf for 20 years that now you've been able to add? And I was like, well, no, actually, I wrote it just, you know, a couple of months ago. And they were surprised by that and very complimentary about how well it just naturally fitted with the original tunes. And some people even said about the new pieces, like In the Blood, which I wrote the whole track from scratch in 2016. But somebody said to me, "Oh, I love that track. Yeah, that's always been my favourite." It's like, well, actually, it's only existed since 2016.
Oh no!
But but this is the point. You know, they've been deluded, if you like, by the writing, and it's given them the impression that music has always been around for 20 years. I guess, you know, to a non-musician, you know, you can fool people pretty quickly, you know, particularly if you're using the same melodies and similar harmonies, similar instrumentation. You know, I think some people will think that it's something that they've heard or they've known for 20 years. And, you know, elements of it, they will have done. They will have known the tune for 20 years and they will have known, ooh, that harp sound and, you know, that texture. And I think that's where the sort of delusion comes in. You're sort of, you know, it's kind of like painting the same picture but with slightly different colours. It's a bit like that.
Right. I think you've definitely kept the integrity of Tomb Raider in all the new pieces that you've created with the suite. I think it's definitely there, for sure.
Thank you. I mean, you know, that was my main goal, was to just, you know, make it sound like it had always been there, basically.
Right. So, of course, all the fans of the Tomb Raider series are very well acquainted with the great Winston and are great fans of him. So I had to ask, have you ever possibly thought of creating a theme song for Winston himself? I know there's been tracks for like Croft Manor in over the years, but I don't think there's ever been a theme song for Winston, has there?
No, there isn't one for him. You know, Winston's a particular favourite cat. You know, I voiced Winston.
Yes, right? Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, he was a particular favourite of mine because he was the comedy element in Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
I think, actually, he wasn't in Tomb Raider 1, was he? No. He introduced him in Tomb Raider 2.
Yep,
that's right.
Yep.
and that's when he could follow her around, you could lock him in the freezer.
Yeah.
And then in Tomb Raider 3, we gave him a bulletproof vest and a target. So if you shot at him, he lifted up his tray and he would sort of shield himself from the bullets. So, you know, his sort of character started progressing and he was a really, yeah, a real comical character. And I really liked Winston. I thought it was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
It never really occurred to me to write him a tune. Yeah, I mean, maybe if I've got some time, you know, on a loose weekend somewhere, maybe I'll think about that and, you know.
I was like, I can't have this interview and not ask him.
Yeah, you know, he it's funny because he kind of came into the game and then he sort of left the game for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then Crystal brought him back in sort of letters and stuff, didn't they? And then right at the end of Shadow, he pops in.
Yeah, I think like he was such a beloved character that no one thought would be a beloved character.
Yeah.
And so I feel like you can't have, you know, Lara Croft or even Croft Manor without thinking of Winston at this point.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, so much so that, you know, we have him in our show. I have an actor, Tom George.
Yeah.
Who plays the part of Winston in the show. And it's just brilliant, man. It brings the house down every time. They love it. You know, it's so funny. And we give him a tray and some cups of tea, you know, and on he comes, tinkling away.
No, I honestly think if Winston had his own theme, I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. I shall think about that.
I'm curious if you ever had any doubts about whether the Kickstarter project and whether it would ever actually be fully funded. You know, because the Tomb Raider franchise has had a loyal and very large fan base for so many years. But I'm sure, like, as with anything, you probably had some doubt that it wouldn't be fully funded. Like, did you ever find yourself thinking those thoughts, or...?
Yes, many, 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 many times. You know, for a year leading up to us pressing the launch button, we were preparing for the Kickstarter. We were planning it, working out what we were going to do, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And all that time, we were thinking, okay, look, we need such and such money. And then I was thinking, are we going to get that? Are we going to get that? And it's like, well, we need it. And then it was like, yeah, well, we need this as well. Okay, well, let's put the money up then. You know, so up it went. I think we started at £65,000, but it just went up and up and up and up.
Did you expect that it would go up?
I guess I didn't to begin with, because I was a bit naive about the whole thing. So I thought 65 grand, yeah, that'll cover it. But no, the more we did our research into the project and did our fact finding, the money just went up and up and up until eventually it was like, Jesus, we've got to ask for £160,000. And then I just thought, you know, my heart was in my stomach. I just thought, you know, are we really, really going to get that? You know, I was very, very nervous about it. And then, of course, it took off really well the first two or three days, but then it kind of flattened out. And the projection on the curve was such that we were not going to hit our target. So after 2 weeks of the campaign, I was properly bricking it, you know. I was like, oh my God, this isn't going to work. And yeah, it was horrible. And then I talked to a few people and we sort of had an emergency meeting about it. And then we collectively decided to restructure our marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So we changed course and it started to work. The pledges started to come in, the pledge curve started to pick up, the trend sort of got better, got closer to the point where we were going to get funded, and it was looking more positive. But we were working round the clock and weekends, you know, it was exhausting. And then in the final, I guess, 5 days, it started to exponentially creep up. And it hit the target, I think, 2 days before the end.
Yeah.
And then we pulled in an extra 30 grand on top of that. So, yeah, amazing. And I broke down into tears after it had hit the target. I couldn't believe it. I guess it was just, you know, a release of stress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I had that thought a million times over that we weren't going to make it. It wasn't guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination. So I was very, very pleased that it got there in the end.
So I just have last few questions. I'm sure you're well aware Lara Croft has been reborn, if you will, with the new origin story trilogy with the new games. And, you know, over the years, your original theme has been preserved in some form or fashion in all the games up until this new, like, trilogy that's come out, where Jason Graves has come up with a new theme. So I'm kind of curious if you've heard it and what you think of it.
Yeah, I've heard his theme. yeah, you know, it's I can't fault it as a theme, you know. You know, it's... You know, he's a great writer. He writes great music, okay? And obviously Crystal asked him to write a theme for Tomb Raider, and he wrote what he did. And that's fine. I can't say I dislike it. I can't say that it says Tomb Raider to me, though, because you know, I've been used to listening to my Tomb Raider theme for 20 years. And so, you know, it's a bit like what I was saying to you earlier about, you know, listening to an original version and then listening to a cover.
Right, right.
You know, it's a bit like that. But here you've got a different tune. So it's saying something different. Now, I've tried to kind of understand the logic as to why Crystal decided to, create a new theme for it. And I guess their reasoning was, you know, they wanted to rebrand it. They wanted a new Lara Croft. And so that warranted a new tune. So, you know, from that perspective, I can see why they did it. I think what I don't understand is why they wanted a new Lara Croft. I don't know what was wrong with the old one. You know, in my opinion, Lara Croft is as much a superhero as Superman or Spider-Man. Okay, you know, she achieves amazing things against the odds, and I guess that's what any superhero does. So, to change her and to sort of make her more human, I don't understand that. I still don't understand quite why they did that. It's like taking Superman's powers away. Why would you do that? It's not really Superman anymore. You know. You know, nothing wrong with Jason's tune, and I guess the people that that have played the reboot as their first Tomb Raider game, they're gonna love that. They're gonna think this is brilliant, you know. And then if you play the my tune, they're gonna go, what? That's not Tomb Raider.
All right.
This is you see what I mean?
Yeah.
They're gonna like the new. They're gonna like Jason Graves' tune. There's not really much else I can say about it, really.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think a lot of the people who have grown up with Lara Croft and played a lot of the older games are definitely going to keep with, you know, your theme has nostalgia stuck to it with all those fans. And I think you're right. I think the newer games are, I think, probably set for a new generation of players that have probably never played the old games, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess another way of looking at it is that, you know, the reboot trilogy is about Lara before she becomes the Tomb Raider that we all know, okay, from the 90s. So it would make sense, wouldn't it, to kind of have a new tune for that trilogy before she becomes Tomb Raider. And then when she does become Tomb Raider, you bring back in my theme that was written back in the 90s. As, you know, now she has become Tomb Raider, you know. Now she has become Lara Croft, you know. It would make sense to bring that theme back now. Whether they do that or not, I don't know. I don't even know who's developing it next. So I don't know. But it would seem to me that door would be open now. I can't imagine they're going to be doing more, background story of Lara before she came the Tomb Raider. I can't imagine there's any more life in that left, really. You know, from what I've heard from a lot of fans, you know, they're a little bit fed up of the, you know, the daddy issues and all that kind of thing. And they just want the superhero back. So, you know, if it was me, I would give them that back and I would bring back the main tune. But obviously I'm very, very biased on that front.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nathan, again, for taking the time to speak with me and for everything that you've done for the Tomb Raider suite. It's just been a pleasure seeing everything just unfold with the music and everything. And I wish you the best of luck in everything that's going to come.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. I'm really happy that I've, you know, finally come back to this music because, you know, like I said earlier, it's something that has just been bugging me for so long. It's like, I really want to finish that tune. And then I just needed an excuse to do it. And the 20th anniversary was exactly that. So it's great to have finally got this stuff together. And I just hope people like the album and yeah, keep listening to it and spreading the word. So thank you very much for interviewing me. It's been great. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, like I said, best of luck with everything that you've got going on.
Thank you.
Like I said, you have your hands full.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully, you know, we should have some more shows coming up soon. You know, I keep trying to get the show to, you know, to tour around the world, and we are doing that slowly, but it's, you know, it's just bit by bit. We're just picking off, you know, venues and places as and when we can. We, you know, we need to get promoters involved and all this kind of thing. So it, you know, but one way or the other, you know, we're getting out there, and you know, slowly we'll hopefully bring it to a city near you sometime soon.
Well, I'm excited to see it all. Thank you for listening to our show. Thank you to the Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Daniela Donsell, and you are listening to WHUS Stories 91.7 FM. I wish you all the best this semester, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.